We resume our meeting, and the final subject of today is definition of a business, and I give the floor to Leonardo.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody. So for this session, we have three papers. Agenda paper 13A is a comparison between the ISB tentative decision on the definition of business project and the ISB amendment issued in January 2017. Agenda paper 13A also includes a summary of the feedback received from the ASAF members at the last ASAF meeting. Agenda paper 13B is just a list of all the tentative decisions made by the board on this project. I prepared this paper only to give you a full picture of the forthcoming amendments. And agenda paper 13C is the due process paper, if you agree with our today recommendations. So we start from agenda paper 13A. Agenda paper 13A is very similar to the paper that we present at the last ASAF meeting. From my understanding of the discussion, ASAF members agreed with all the tentative decision made by the ISB, except for one exception. This exception is the screening test. For this reason, in page 7 of agenda paper 13A, I prepare a table where I summarize all the pros and cons of the possible solution about the screening test. The first solution is the proposal included in the ISB exposure draft and also in the FASB final amendments. It's a screening test that is mandatory and determinative. The main advantage of this solution is that the screening test address the comments raised during the post-implementation review of FRS3. The main argument against this solution is that this proposal is too rule-based. The second solution is to remove the screening test. This approach maybe is the most principle-based approach. But on the other hand, if we delete the screening test, we will have only the guidance of substantive processes, and this guidance may be difficult to apply in some circumstances. The third solution is a non-determinative screening test, so a rebuttable presumption or an indicator. This approach limits outcomes that are inconsistent with the substance of the transaction, because this approach requires the entity to confirm or to rebut the outcome of the test. The argument against this approach is that this approach is complex, because in all cases, an entity should assess the guidance or substantive process to confirm or to rebut the outcome of the test. The last proposal is the proposal agreed by the ISB in the April meeting, and is a screening test that is optional and determinative. This approach permits to assess whether a substantive process has been acquired, if this assessment is more efficient or results in a better conclusion. The argument against this approach is that it is an option, and so allow entity to select the preferred outcome could lead to structural opportunities. On balance, considering all these pros and cons, we continue to support a screening test that is optional and determining, so the last proposal. Today, we are recommending only two clarification to the screening test. The first clarification is to explain better the description of the screening test, as explained in paragraph 22 of the paper. This means that an entity is permitted but not required to apply the screening test if the screening test identifies an asset purchase, no further assessment is needed. However, the entity is not prohibited from doing such further assessment. If the screening test does not identify an asset purchase, the entity must do a further assessment, and if the entity elected not to apply the screening test, it must do the same assessment. The second clarification that we are recommending today is explained in paragraph 16 of the paper, and it relates to the cash acquired. We are proposing to exclude from the ghost assets acquired, the cash acquired for the purpose of the screening test. This is because the presence of cash does not indicate that a substantive process has been acquired, and in some cases, the cash acquired may distort the outcome of the test. This proposal will eliminate a difference between our amendments and the FASB amendments, so that the mechanics of the two tests will be the same, and the only difference between our amendments and the FASB amendment will be that the FASB amendment in the screen test in the FASB amended amendments is mandatory, and our screening test is optional, but the mechanics will be exactly the same. Another difference that I want to highlight today relates to the illustrative examples. The SB exposure draft includes an example that we reproduce in paragraph 53 of the paper regarding the acquisition of oil and gas operations. The FASB included this example in its exposure draft. Then, on the basis of the feedback received, the FASB decided to delete this illustrative example. Today, we are recommending to keep this example because we think that the example is consistent with the guidance on the substantive processes. However, we want to clarify in the FAC partner that the processes acquired are difficult to replace. And for this reason, the example is the acquisition of a business. Our recommendations are listed in paragraph 60 of the paper, and we are asking to confirm all the tentative decisions made in April and June 2017, to confirm the proposed example J on the acquisition of oil and gas operations, and to specify that the gross assets considered in the screening test exclude goodwill resulting from the effect of deferred tax liabilities, deferred tax asset, and cash and cash equivalents acquired.
Can I just add something to what Leo said about the ASAP meeting? Because I'd like to slightly qualify one of the things you said. Because I think you said that the ASAP agreed with everything except what was said about the screening test. Now, my recollection of the discussion was that the ASAP members who spoke earlier in the debate had some doubts about it. But I think the debates they had were about the description we had of the interaction between the optional part and the determinative part, and it was confusing them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's enabled us to come up with a better description than what's now in paragraph 22. But I also got the sense in the second half of the discussion that they seem much more on board with where we are once we explain what's going on more clearly.
I agree. François.
Following up to what Peter just said, my question is, do you intend to keep the word determinative? I totally agree and support what you have in paragraph 22. I think it's well articulated. But I think the word determinative is the one that is bringing the confusion, because it sends the message that once you have carried out the screening test, you have to take the conclusion. So you can choose to go or not go, but if you choose to go, you would have to accept the answer. So it's not what you have in paragraph 22, but I think that's what people have understood, and I would understand with the word determinative. So my question is, do you drop that term? Do you find another one?
Yes.
No further assessment is needed.
Yes.
Okay.
I agree with what you've recommended here, and I think for me that this re-articulation should address most of the concerns as I understood them at ASAP, because it seemed to me a lot of the concerns was about enforceability, like how would you know if somebody had started doing the test or not. So I think this helps with that. But one thing that I wondered whether it's worth bringing out if we're going to talk about this on the basis, in addition to the arguments that you've got in paragraph 24 about why you think there's a limited risk in having these two different paths that people can go down, to me the other reason why I'm not too concerned which path they go down is surely whichever path they go down, we think it comes up with an appropriate assessment. So to have that test in there at all, we must think it's okay. And we're not going to object to somebody doing even more work and going through the full assessment. So I find it hard to get excited about the choice, frankly, particularly when the outcomes are expected to usually be the same. So if we're going to start explaining why we thought it was okay, I think that is a helpful argument for me.
Jane Chow.
Thank you, Hans. The first question, actually, I agree with Brazos and Sue's point. I agree with the staff trying to clarify the screen test, currently paragraph 22. But I still have a question about 22B. If a company on screen test and identify the transaction as an asset purchase, and then because the standard will not prohibit the entity to do further assessment, so the further assessment show that it is a business combination, and then the entity simply just accounts for the transaction as business combination. Whether this kind of accounting treatment meet or comply with our standards.
Yes, that's why I
think in practice I'll ask this kind of question. And the second one is about the example J, that is the acquisition of oil and gas operation. This is page 15. As I know, when we seek the comments, I think in China, some oil and gas companies told us, in reality, it's very rare cases. If an entity has acquired so-called operational processes, but not including employees, not including workforces, who will help them to operate those processes? Normally, in practice, the workforces will be included in the acquisition. So I hope that we may be double checked in reality whether it's real, you know, in the real transactions, whether it happened or not. Because I noticed that Norwegian Accounting Standards Board also read this comment, said that the fact pattern that is not clearly described and not clearly recognized in their experiences. So I hope that we need to check whether this kind of assumption is correct or not. And the third one is page 19. With regard to the screen test, and for screen test, we are trying to identify the so-called single asset, and the last line, and normally tangible asset that is attached to and cannot be physically removed and used separately from other tangible assets, or a right of use assets as described in IFRS 16 leases. Actually, FSB said that it's all intangible assets. It's different from the wording we use, the right of use asset. And as I remember that in our exposure draft, we did not use right of use assets. We used other tangible assets. So if we are focused on other tangible assets, and FSB, they focus on intangible assets, that's a substantive difference there. Mm-hmm. So I would like to ask whether there is a substantive difference there. What's the intention we use right of use assets? And another example is that in China, if an entity buy land, actually they cannot buy the ownership of the land. So they only buy the right of using land. All those of right of using land normally we'll recognize as intangible assets. So if intangible assets, it's not relevant to refer to intangible assets, that means in China those building and intangible assets will be, you know, separate. Actually they cannot be removed and separated. Mm-hmm. So it will be a very big impact to Chinese current practice.
I think that that follows on directly from the requirements in IFRS 16 and the description of the asset in 16. So I think in 16 we've been quite careful not to put an intangible label on the right of use asset. So I think that this project's just directly reflecting what's in the leasing standard rather, and it's slightly different to how the FASB's articulated. So I think it's a gap difference, a slight gap description difference, if I can put it that way, that's reflected in the document.
But maybe in practice, maybe a big difference, because intangible assets and the right of use assets, it's a different and different standards we are, you know, stipulate and see. So, and last one, sorry.
Oh, just on that one, Jen Chao, I think we'll check that there's no intention. My impression is it's probably just a labelling difference for the same thing.
Okay.
It's a different labelling standard, but we'll check.
I hope that there is no substantive difference. Yeah. And the last one is about, it's page 20. What's so-called similar assets. And the similar assets, I saw that we have different items there. But the one thing I would like to know that whether we should put the principle first and then to, you know, try to list what kind of items then. Because first of all, you say that a tangible asset and an intangible asset, it's different, no problem. But the last one, we said identifiable assets within the same asset class that have significant different risks. It seems this one should be a principle. That's based on whether they have different or same risk, then to try to use this kind of criteria to say that whether they should be at the same class or not. Why I ask this question is that if we look at the financial assets, that's different classes of financial assets. I remember in exposure draft, we did mention that receivables, marketable securities, this kind of, they should belong to different classes of financial assets. But if we look at the IFRS 9, actually, we classify the financial assets as amortized cost or fair value to P&L or fair value to OCI. So what kind of classes we mentioned here, we should make it clear whether it's based on the risk or based on the classification of the IFRS 9 or based on the exposure draft proposal that's in receivable or marketable, you know, security to this kind of matter. I'm not sure that I need further your classification with regard is easy.
Okay. Regarding this.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Question on paragraph 24 on page 7. So you said we acknowledge that this approach has the potential to allow entity select a preferred outcome, and that could lead to a structuring opportunity. I disagree with this comment because our approach doesn't allow preferred approach. Our approach only give a proper opportunity to have a proper test. So we do not allow, you know, preferred approach. Suppose if your preferred approach is business, and then the screening test highly likely to lead it to asset, then you can go to the if it's a mandatory, then it's full stop. It's going to be asset, but we will allow you to step further. So there is no opportunity to pick up the preferred approach. So if the proper test outcome is, again, asset, you can't escape it anyway. So therefore, yeah, this description is not really correct.
Mary.
couple of things. I support the staff recommendation. in terms of keeping the test optional. I think it's going building on a couple of the other comments that have been made, let's look closely at how we draft this and present this, both in the document and the basis, because I think it's understandable when you step back and remember what we were trying to achieve with this. On its face, it just, you know, it could be subject to being misunderstood in the way that that sentence talk just pointed to. But I think we say, A, it's about the principle and the standard, which is, do you meet the definition of a business? And we have done work to clarify what is the definition of a business. And that's the principle that you have to meet. The test was put in an attempt to respond to some of the feedback we had, that it can be complex and very judgmental, and so this was designed to be a tool for simplifying rather than a new test or to direct abuse. And in terms of reasons for us reaching a different conclusion from the FASB, I think while they identified problems in the same area of the standards, i.e. the definition of a business, they had a different problem they were trying to address in terms of perhaps too many transactions being identified as a business, which is not feedback that we heard. So I think this is one of the instances in which the context that is provided in the basis for conclusion will make a big difference in terms of explaining and making the board's conclusion understandable. A couple of other points. This is maybe just a wording one. In paragraph 15, we seem to have a slight difference in the wording between what may be a summary of the FASB requirements and what you're saying we should do, which is they said deferred tax assets and goodwill resulting from the effect of DTL. And we say in the effects of DTL from the gross, should be excluded. I'm not sure you meant to have a wording difference. If you don't, I don't see why we would. And if you do think we need a wording difference, then I'd like to understand it, not necessarily now.
No wording.
Okay, and then the last is, I think similar to Jean Del's concern about the example J. I guess I looked at it and said, I don't see it being the critical example that really makes it all come alive. And we had concerns expressed about some aspects of the example by two stakeholders who, one is an oil and gas company and one is standard setter from a country that has a lot of experience in this. And then we also look at FASB having decided to drop it. I haven't seen a compelling example reason to keep it. So in terms of your package of recommendations, that's the one I was a little queasy about in terms of why we feel so strongly we should keep that example despite the comments that we had. And that, you want to take your best shot at persuading me?
the only reason why I'm proposing to keep this example, because this is the only example that we do of a process that is difficult to replace. We did 9 examples in the spoiler draft with different scenarios. This is the only scenario where there is no acquisition of workforce. And so you have to go to paragraph B12BB, and you can say that you have acquired a substantive process if the process is difficult to replace, is costly, and so on. This is the only example of this specific requirement. For this reason, I would like to keep it, and to clarify the fact partner, I agree that the fact partner is not very clear, but it's not a big issue. It's only an example. If you prefer to have exactly the same example with the FASB, we can do this.
I'm actually less influenced. Like the FASB setting to drop it is the third piece of the third. It's the third straw on the camel's back, rather than the main reason why I want to drop it. Because I look more at the concerns from Norway and BP cited in the letter that make me go, are we going overboard trying to illustrate this point? And then it's kind of the final piece of evidence is that FASB decided to drop it rather than my first objective being that we keep exactly the same examples. So I think good good, that's a good reason, a reasonably good reason for wanting to keep the example. I guess it just makes me think, do we really want to spend the time to get the example really worked out? Is it so important to have an example of that comment, or can we just live with the observation that what is it, difficult and time-consuming to replace the process is an indication of a substantive process?
This is already in the guidance.
Yeah.
This is just an example to illustrate.
I'm not sure we have to illustrate everything, every point that's in the guidance.
No.
I was also a bit unsure about this one, to be honest, and partly because I remember a precedent, which is for IS37, which was developed jointly with the UK. And in the end, the UK issued a standard which was almost identical. There was one difference in the body of the standard. But I discovered several years later that they'd kept an example that we'd had in the ED but had dropped after the ED, which actually was a very straightforward example. But then people read things into the fact that they'd kept it and we'd dropped it, and they read totally wrong things into the fact that... So I think there's some advantages in possibly keeping the same examples unless there's a really compelling reason to have this one.
People read meaning in everything we do.
Yep.
Including when we don't do something.
Yeah. When we don't mean anything.
Yeah.
Martin.
I have to say I still have some problems with this optional and determinative test level. Because maybe I'm paranoid, but if I would be a preparer, and I think I have, let's assume I have concluded I don't want to do the test, I will treat it as a business combination. But then an auditor comes and say, your junior staff member had kind of notes and was said, okay, the fair value of this is equal to the fair value of the asset, so you have done the screening test, you have done an error. Therefore, I think it is problematic, because what is this kind of screening test? If somebody in a verbal note has said, okay, the fair value is equal to that, or what is this kind of? Because it is then determinative, if you have done the test, you have to do it. But if you have then as a more senior guy have concluded, we don't do it, but anybody has done it, then you are in trouble. But the question really I have is, why don't we have this kind of saying, okay, it is optional, but then if you have the outcome, is it is an asset deal? Why can you then cannot have this kind of rebuttable presumption from the preparer perspective? Say, okay, if you have concluded the screening test is an asset deal, why you cannot have the opportunity to rebut this and say, if I have good arguments, I can show it that it is kind of business combination. Because otherwise, I think it is problematic to deal with this kind of money. How should you control that nobody in your organization has done the screening test? I don't know how we should do that.
That's what we tried to address in paragraph 22b.
But my understanding is in 22b, you're saying, okay, if you really, your objective is that you don't want to have an asset deal, you don't, in the first place, don't do this screening test.
Well, that was just an observation, but what we've said in 22b in the first sentence is that if they identify an asset purchase, they don't have to do the test, but they're not prohibited from going down the other path if they want to.
But then I don't understand what the alternative is. Then I don't understand.
Well, no, that's what causes the confusion at the ASAP meeting, which
then
is why
I don't
try to spell it out.
So if you can show the
worked
example.
We
drop the term now,
isn't it?
Yes.
No further assessment is needed. So if you've got the example, you can show it to the auditors, and that's it. End of discussion.
Exactly. The termini is just a word that I use to summarize this.
Okay, then
it's not the right word.
I have not understood it.
I think you're going to need a little diagram in this.
No.
Thank you. I have a similar concern with Mary's here on that example Z. You know, first we decide to delete this example because too technical. The example is too technical. That's one reason. Another one is not be beneficial to preparers in the oil and gas industry. So you gave us some kind of justification why we keep this example J. However, do you know why what part of this example is too technical, as we thought so, or why this is not beneficial to oil and industry companies?
No, it's not the example right in the special draft that is too technical. FASB received a lot of comments on the example. If they address all these comments, the example will become too technical. So they decided to delete the example.
So that means the example, the structure of this example, facts and circumstances are not too technical, but in some other reasons they decide to delete.
In the exposure draft, is not too technical. After the exposure draft, they received a lot of comments. In order to address all these comments, they have to modify the example.
I see.
And the example will become too technical. And so they decided to delete the example.
But they failed to improve the example based on their comments.
Exactly.
So I have strict concern on our IFRS preparers to have similar the example J, but I'm not sure whether another part is beneficial, not be beneficial to the preparers in oil and gas industry. What part of this example J is that says this is not beneficial to the company? You know what? You just explained the technical issue, the beneficial issue. Do you know why? No. So if, as you said, if this example is not useful for our IFRS preparers in oil and gas industry, we should think about carefully whether we delete this or not.
In my view, it is useful if we clarify the fact partner, in my view, because we are illustrating a specific requirement of the new guidance. That is the requirement when you don't acquire the workforce, a process is substantive if it's difficult to replace. We are giving an example of this guidance. So for this reason, in my view, this is useful, because in the example we give all the possible solution to find a business, to recognize a business. But as I said, if we delete this example, it's not a big issue.
Okay. May I ask one more? Sorry. Another one is paragraph 16. That is a very interesting example of land and cash and cash equivalent. So 50% of fair value is on land, and 50% of goes to the cash and cash equivalents. So if we do not exclude this cash and cash equivalents, the screening test may be some not provide a desirable proper outcome. So this is a good idea, excluding cash and cash equivalents. Mm. My concern is some similar short-term monetary assets close to cash and cash equivalents. And those companies, if we just have 50% of land, and another one is, maybe for example, marketing security, yeah, 50%. So in that case, you should go to the next stage, substantive process test. So what I'm saying is, including just some one item of this kind of cash and cash equivalents as a kind of expedient, the practical expedient, however, still a lot of problems.
We are proposing excluding cash.
Yeah, excluding cash and cash equivalents. But if that excluding this one is improve the effectiveness of the test, right?
Yes.
So if that's the purpose, then we should exclude more short-term monetary assets.
It's too complicated.
Too complicated. That's a kind of.
I think it's just a simple cut and converge,
right?
You're right. There might be other candidates, but I think this is a practical approach, partly. Right?
Yeah, it's a practical expedient, and it's not a test that's the determinative criteria. And so I think one of the advantages of making this optional was that it takes a lot of pressure off these detailed questions about exactly what's included in the 90% test.
Tom?
Just a clarification, just on the FASB thing on page 18, I guess. When they say mandatory and determined, it's the same ever since Francoise raised it. 19. When FASB says screening test is mandatory and determinative, if they get an asset outcome, do they stop, full stop?
Yes.
So they don't have any option of appealing back. Okay.
No.
That was fine. Although I agree with you, it would be completely illogical if you've given somebody the option for them to then reject the asset one. It makes no economic sense. So why did we put the option in if it makes no sense if we give them the option?
No, the option is to do the tests.
No. Why did it's the second option about if it tells me asset? Why even bother to say, because it's totally illogical for them to reject asset if they've chosen.
Because ASAP got very tied up in the fact that if somebody's chosen to do the test,
yes,
and it gives the outcome they don't want, what happens if they then decide to pretend they never did the test in the first place?
But that's my point: is if they don't want an asset outcome, they don't choose the option, and they save money. So, that's why I mean, it does no harm because only a loony would do it. But okay, so.
Tell us what you really think.
Canadians are called loonies.
It's true. I would. Given, if we're going to leave in the option, I just find it confusing if FASB's got the determinative, and that means full stop. And so I just agree, let's get a different word in there. On balance, I think the option makes sense. I think, in particular, it gives people a chance to do things more cheaply. If they're happy to have asset and they think they're going to get asset, a screening test will make it cheaper. If they actually prefer business combination, they save money by going straight to the business combination and not having to do this mandatory test. So it seems there's an unequivocal saving of money, and I don't think there's that much room for somebody to mess around. Okay, thank you.
One mind just come out with regard to the example J. Actually, this example, what we would like to address is when we acquired assets or operational processes without workforce, and they still could be recognized, identified as business. I'm thinking that at current AI, area, that means you acquire whether you can find any industries, you acquire operational process, and this process include artificial, intelligence. Mm-hmm. Don't need any workforces, so it's very clear. Yeah, maybe in the future this kind of business will increasing dramatically. So, yeah, it makes sense. We simply would like to address whether without a workforce or not. So. Can make this example simple, yeah.
Okay, all right. So, we need a vote. Do we agree with the staff's recommendations?
For example,
can we vote example J to the separate?
Yeah, separate.
Example J.
Yeah.
If you look at paragraph 60B.
So, do we want to confirm example J? Oh, that doesn't seem to be the case. Okay. Yeah. Otherwise, do we agree with the staff recommendations?
Okay.
Okay.
So that was all right? That's everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, now the due process paper, agenda paper 13C. In 13C, we demonstrate that we have done all the due process steps required for issue a narrow scope amendment. We think that the board should not re-expose the amendment to FRS 3 because the decision made in April and June are only clarification and not substantial changes. We also recommend that the effective date should be 1st January 2020. And our question for you are in page 6 of the paper. The first question is whether you agree that the amendments to FRS 3 should not be re-exposed.
Agree.
All in favour?
Do we agree with the effective date of the 1st of January 2020?
All in favour?
Consage?
I have a suggestion to make. Maybe it's too bold, but the suggestion is the following. Do you think we could include in the basis for conclusions the fact that with these amendments we aim at making it easier to get to the same outcome as the one that was already requested by IFS 3, and people would be able, I mean, to look at this basis for conclusions and in fact use this guidance immediately, even, you know, this not being contrary to the former IFS 3, but being a way of having IFRS 3 as intended implied in a better way.
Okay.
Bold or what?
Amaro?
I forgot to ask about the effective date. How about early application?
Sorry.
Paragraph 14, we are very clear that amendments not only are narrow, but expect to help entities in determining. So I think we forgot to mention help early application here.
It's in the question.
Our recommendation is to permit early application.
I couldn't read this. With early, the very last, sorry.
Sorry.
Mary, do we have to confirm?
I was going to. I think while our overall objective is to get closer, I think we have made some specific changes in the assessments you make,
yeah,
including things like reduced cost and other points. That means that I don't think we could just say broadly that you can draw on this earlier.
So who would like to dissent? Anybody? No takers? Okay. And then permission to ballot.
All in favor.
Okay, that brings us to the end of today's discussions. Oh, yes, and this is definitely Ludo's last time. Because Leo has tried to leave us before. A visiting fellow from 2010 to 2014, and then with the kind assistance of the Italian Standard Setter, you continued working with us remotely. You've done so very well. You've worked on numerous implementation issues. But now it's truly over.
Except the sweep issue.
To draft it.
last time at the board table. So we thank you for you've done a great job working on all these different highly technical issues, and we thank you for all your efforts, and we wish you all the best back in Italy, where you already are.
Exactly.